All right, welcome everyone back to the 12th class in the 39 prohibited categories of creative labor, also known as our crash course in Shabbat. Tonight we will be dealing with two different melachot, two different forms of creative labor which are forbidden. These two are included along with the ones we did last class and the next couple we will be doing under the sections of the types of work that were done in the Mishkan, in the Tabernacle. And recall, it is the type of work that was done in the Tabernacle that defines for us what is not permitted to be done on Shabbat. So these two, in fact the next one that's coming up in the Mishnah, HaMechabeh, extinguishing, is a bit puzzling at first. Why would extinguishing, why would putting out a fire be a form of creative labor in the Mishkan? What possibly could that be used for? And the second one we'll be doing is kindling, is making a fire. That one is perhaps easier to understand. So, if you think for a moment, it may not be immediately recognizable as to why, but there is good reason. In the Beit HaMikdash, in order to be able, in the Mishkan, in the Tabernacle, in the creation and its formation, there was necessity to smelt, to melt down metals and be able to form them into various shapes of the various implements that were needed in the actual setting up of the, all the different items and so forth. So in order to be able to create the high heats that are necessary, it's a requirement that you make use of coal. And the way that you use coal or coke and the various materials, the way you create them is you take wood and you light them up, and when they reach a certain point, you then put them all out immediately. And then what happens is the resulting material, which is this charred material, charcoal, can then be turned around and relit in a oven situation that would actually produce a very high temperature in order to be used for smelting and melting of metals and so forth. So it's along those lines that extinguishing becomes a creative labor and not permitted to be used on the, it should not be permitted to be done on Shabbat. So what is extinguishing? What is a mechabeh? What is this Torah? And again, what is this prohibited category? It is the extinguishing or reducing of a flame. So let's start with the things that we can do, as we generally like to. Well, you can open a window to air out a room if there's no wind blowing and there's a candle sitting there in the room. So if you're going to open the window, and it's reasonable to construe that there is not going to be a wind that will gust through, then in that particular situation, it's all right to open a window. Now, the opening of the window itself isn't going to create a breeze. That's a little bit different than a door, which we'll talk about in a moment. So, therefore, if it's reasonable to assume that no breezes are going to be coming by or anything else, it'd be all right to open up that window because it's a little stuffy in the room and you want to air it out. And the idea is your intention is not to affect the flame at all. Your only intention is to change the climate in that room in order to make it something more reasonable for yourself. So, in addition to that, setting up a timer before Shabbat, that would also be permitted. Even though that timer is going to, over the course of Shabbat, going to be putting out lights and so forth, and turning them on as well, it's, nevertheless, that's all right. Historically speaking, there were poskim early on that did not allow the use of timers because of the fact that if a person was walking by and would see lights going on and off in a person's house, he would reasonably construe that that house had people in it violating Shabbat. That's really no longer the case today, in that everybody is well aware of the workings of the of timers, and therefore it is no longer considered to be a major issue. Let's say you have a timer that you've gone ahead and you set up before Shabbat, and at this point you want to extend the time before it turns off. In other words, you have a light, it's on in your room, you're reading, all of a sudden you see, hey, you know what, I'd like to leave this light on because of the fact that I'm busy reading now and I don't want to interrupt. So what you could do is you'd be allowed to go over, according to most poskim, to the timer, and you'd be able to remove the pin that would normally speaking turn off the timer, say in the next 10 minutes or so, and this would extend the amount of time that the appliance that in this case it would be in this case will be on. Or what you'd be allowed to do, actually, so the opposite case, both cases happen to be fine. The other case is that if you happen to have the timer that is on, so that the light is off and you want to prevent it from turning on, you'd be allowed to go ahead and remove the peg that would turn it on. So this will remain permanently off. The one thing that you for sure cannot do regarding this timer at any point is you cannot go ahead and take a pin and place the pin in the timer so that it will now turn on at an earlier point. In this case, you are facilitating the light turning on earlier. And the same thing is if the light is on, you're not allowed to go ahead and take the pin and move it in a way so that it will turn off earlier. So you cannot change the state earlier, but you can prevent the state from, change it from turning on. You can make it turn on earlier, and you cannot make it turn off earlier. So those are the key things. The Chachamim, they saw that if a person was to become used to seeing certain things, that they would reasonably construe from this that, in fact, something would be permissible. So one of those things has to do with putting a pan of water near candles or various other, you know, again, various other oil-based, lanterns and so forth, where there's a lot of sparking and things like that. So sparks might be flying off of this. So if a person put water there underneath the candles, this would be a problem on Shabbat. And the rabbis made it a problem even from before Shabbat not to do this, because, again, they didn't want you to think that it will be all right on Shabbat. And in general, they didn't want anybody to construe that it will be all right for a person to hasten the putting out of sparks or flames in any way. So therefore, even from before Shabbat, a person is not allowed to put down underneath or around his candles a pan with water in order to catch the sparks that are flying off. But what you could do on Shabbat would be fine is to put aluminum down to prevent your tables, whatever have you, from catching on fire or having problems. That's fine. Now, if, God forbid, a person was in a situation where a fire was to set out, and it has a piece of cloth, his tablecloth, or something else like that, where, again, the fire now starts on part of it, it would be permissible for a person to go ahead and to soak the non-burning parts of the cloth, preferably with a colored liquid, in order to avoid problems which we've talked about in the past with the cloth. In other words, to come under that category. So again, if you're using a colored liquid, something that's going to ruin the cloth, then that wouldn't be an issue. So again, the point is you'd be able to soak up the rest of the garment in order to prevent for that place, meaning that part of the garment which is on fire, from then extending. So again, this liquid would soak in, and that would prevent that. And that would be fine, because this idea would be is that even though there's like a capillary action happening within the material itself, and the water then is going to be soaking and moving closer, the intention is not to do so. It's only to soak the area where the water is poured, and when the flame would reach that part, it would then be extinguished. So along the same lines, it would be permissible to take, say, cups of plastic, plastic filled with water or something like that, and put it near a fire, so that, again, when the fire would reach it, it would burn the cup, and therefore the water would splash on it and put it out. And all this, of course, is talking about small little flames that are not dangerous. Anytime something is going to become a threat of life, then there's nothing to talk about. At that point, you do anything that is necessary in order to prevent that. But there are certainly possibilities. Again, if something is in a controlled situation and it's reasonable to see that there's a way to deal with it, then before, again, jumping into any situation of putting out a flame directly, we have to make use of other means. So, for example, if an item happens to be set on fire, what have you, if it's possible and it's safe to do so, a person should take that item and should go ahead and put it someplace, for example, throw it outside on a pavement or something, where, again, it'll burn itself out. Same sort of situation. You're not allowed to directly put out a flame unless, again, there's a life-threatening situation. But if you had a flame that would then, say, set off in your house or something like that, God forbid, and there was concern that the mezuzot in your house and the sfarim in your house could possibly burn and everything else, it would then be permissible to go ahead and tell a non-Jew to put out the fire, to call the fire department or anything else for that matter. If a person had a situation where he had, again, his candle was set up, and he lit his candles, and he sees that one of the candles goes ahead and happens to bend over and fall down on the tablecloth. Now, it hasn't set fire to anything else, so in a situation like that, you pick it up in a strange manner if possible, maybe kalach yad, again, if possible, the fallen candle before it sets fire, and you can therefore, that's of course, provided it fell in a place where it wouldn't have any problems. I mean, if it fell onto a tile floor where it wouldn't damage anything, in other words, it couldn't set a fire or create a life-threatening situation, then it's better to leave it go and let it burn out. But if there's a situation where something could happen, then again, picking it up, kalach yad, would permit you to go ahead and to pick it up. Of course, if a person is in a situation where he happens to be wearing something that's set on fire, then of course, if he cannot remove it quickly and put it someplace, then he should stop, drop, and roll, and of course anything else is needed in order to put out that flame. Again, the key here is always remember that the most important thing, of course, is a person protecting his life. Certainly, if there's anything at all that could create a situation where there's something life-threatening, a person has to, without question, immediately take the necessary steps to go ahead and, again, do whatever has to be done in order to prevent that fire from becoming life-threatening. Now, in general, any type of fire that's going to take place within a city area, in other words, if your home is, unless you have the only example I can think of right away where there's certainly no danger is if you happen to have a tent out in the middle of the woods that sets out, not in the middle of an open clearing, so not even a forest fire, but it happens to set fire, and as a result of that, the only damage will be to your pocketbook and not to anything else. In a case like that, you have to let it go ahead and burn out. But in any other situation, you happen to be in a high rise, you're in a home within a city area, if a fire was to go ahead and was to break out in your home, the potential loss of life to yourself is certainly possible, or anybody else that's in the house, but all the more so that this could then spread to the rest of the neighborhood and could create a situation. And therefore, these are considered to be very grave that any fire should become even moderately uncontrolled, that it's immediately necessary to right away take all precautions, and if necessary, and using any shinoim that are possible, a person should go ahead and try and call the fire department, or at least if it's easy enough to notify a non-Jew to do so. But the case is that, again, anytime something life-threatening comes up, it's immediate. And in our day and age, in our situations where in our homes there are all kinds of feeds for gas, electricity, there are various other chemicals that are in the building materials and everything else, any serious flame is automatically considered to be life-threatening, and therefore all actions that can be taken should be taken. So what can't you do? Well, you can't blow out a candle, which we've talked about. What you can't do is even regulate or change the rate of burn for that candle. That means to say that you can't turn around and put a cup over it in order to snuff out the oxygen, or even for that matter to reduce the oxygen by reducing some sort of cone that might be over it, say in a lantern or something like that. You certainly can't lower ovens. Now, there is a difference between electric and gas ovens, but it's sort of academic. In all these cases, you can't lower the oven. You certainly can't hire the ovens, as we'll see in the next malacha, but it's the same idea. As we talked about before, opening up a door, if candles or a flame is nearby, if that door opening up in that room is going to easily affect the candle, then that's a problem. In other words, when you are in your house and you're opening your door and flinging it open, that's going to create a breeze, plus the potential breeze that's going to come in from the outside and everything else. All these things create a problem, and therefore a person should be cognizant of making sure that he places his candles in his house in a way that it will not put him in line to these potential issues. We talked about before, again, the idea of placing a pan of water under candles to catch sparks. Even before Shabbat, it would not be permissible. And again, a fire which would not be a threat to life. So again, we're talking about something that's occurring. I mean, if you happen to have something in your house of value and it's on a stone concrete floor where it's not going to spread or create problems and it sets on fire, there's nothing you can do about it. In other words, that's it. There is a prohibition against putting out flames, and that's the law. And therefore, on Shabbat, we honor the Shabbat sometimes by allowing these things to happen. Looking at the next malacha, in the language of the Mishnah, vehamavir, which is the kindling, the lighting of, again, kindling or increasing of a flame. So what can we do? Well, you can open and close your refrigerator or freezer if no lights will go on and no fans directly. Now, if you happen to have one of those models of refrigerators, I think Sub-Zero is one of the manufacturers of such a model, where every time you open or close it, there's a fan that will go on that will actually suction closed and suck out some of the air to make the cooling process easier within the unit itself. So that is, again, electronically controlled, and it's a problem. Now, in a lot of those type of units, even like that, it's possible to cover over the switch that lets the electronics know whether or not the door is open or closed, and that would solve your problem. Now, you can either remove the light bulb inside, or you could cover over the switch of generally any refrigerator or freezer under normal circumstances, and that opens up the possibility for it to be all right. Also, the issue here as well, it is not universally held, although, again, it is the vast majority of poskim that hold, in fact, opening and closing a refrigerator that is run by a thermostat is permissible. But it's worthy to note that there are opinions that hold that you cannot do this. First of all, what's the concept behind the thermostat? The idea is that you're not directly causing a change in what's happening. And in this case, when you're opening or closing the refrigerator, again, it's an indirect action from a series of indirect actions that eventually cause a change in the thermostat, and it's not an immediate action. In fact, if it would be that opening or closing would have an immediate reaction of any type, even if it would be thermostat-driven, then it wouldn't be considered indirect anymore and would also be forbidden. So there are those poskim that feel that this permissibility of a thermostat does not apply, and therefore they actually hold that you need to put your refrigerator on a timer. And therefore, if you wanted to open or close the refrigerator, you'd have to run it around the scheduling of your timer. Or for that matter, set up, if it's possible, to set up a timer directly controlling the actual condenser in the unit itself, so this way there will be no changes in the operations regardless of opening and closing, and you can open and close any time. But again, everything would have to run, therefore, on some sort of timer mechanism as opposed to a thermostat. In fact, this would extend, according to those opinions, even to a person's house where they have air conditioning and things like that, that they would need to have that air conditioning unit, again, on some sort of timer as opposed to a thermostat-based situation. Nevertheless, this is not, per se, the most universally accepted opinion. Most Sephardic poskim and, for that matter, most Ashkenazi poskim both hold that it is perfectly all right to make use of these items, and therefore opening and closing the refrigerator is fine. If a person was to have a candle, a wax candle, now there's a difference between a wax candle and an oil lamp, in that when a person moves around an oil lamp in any way, what happens is the shifting oil within the lamp will actually go ahead and cause the flame to increase or decrease based on the movement of the oil inside the lamp itself. But in the case of a wax candle, movement of the candle does not necessarily create a direct change in the actual flame itself. So therefore, if you were to have made a mistake and you lit your Shabbat candles too close to, say, a curtain or something like that, it would be permissible to go ahead and, again, you know, if necessary and possible, move it kalachar yad and move it in a way of a shinoi, in other words, in a different manner, and just to go ahead and move that away from the curtains or whatever else to prevent the danger. But in the case of oil, this is a real situation. It's a real big problem because any movement is going to make changes in the flame. So therefore, under those circumstances, a person should really try and make a serious effort before Shabbat to plan out where he's going to be lighting his lamps. Moving an electric light, being careful to keep it plugged in, for example. Let's say you have these halogen lamps and you happen to have it in your room. So it wouldn't be a problem. You wanted to go to sleep and you wanted darkness, to go ahead and take the halogen lamp and just shift it outside the room and then close the door. Again, provided that it's not going to create any question of turning on or off. In this case, that lamp, even though being muksa, you now need the place where it is. And again, this movement of the lamp, in this case, the electric-based lamp, doesn't create any change at all in terms of fuel consumption or the actual brightening or dimming of the light or anything else like that, and therefore it's all right. A similar type of situation is if you want to adjust the fan to blow towards you. If you have one of these wall fans or desk fans and you want to go ahead and you want to shift it so that it was blowing towards you, that would be fine. One thing to keep in mind is that there are many poskim that do not permit turning on or off the moving fan, the knob that would turn it to cycle versus remain stationary. And the reason is when you start playing around with the knobs, it looks very much like you are turning on or off the unit. And on that basis, many poskim do not wish to permit such use of the of a fan. But again, so just adjust it to you is fine. Again, provided you're taking all the precautions to make sure nothing gets unplugged or things like that. Reading near electric lights. Now, in the times of the Mishnah and before, there was a concern that a person who would be near a lantern, or an oil-filled light or something along those lines, that he might actually come to make adjustments in order to make it easier for him to read. So, and again, people are so used to this, especially in those times, that they would just go ahead and just make adjustments whenever possible in order to be able to, to see better with their reading. So, in other words, without even thinking twice, they would go ahead and make a change in the lamp. So, therefore, they made a gzerah, and they did not permit people to read next to these lamps. We see in the, that there are occasions where it would be permissible to make use of the lamp light. For example, students with their Rebbe there would be allowed to go ahead and would be able to read, because again, they'd be always constantly concerned and their Rebbe would be on watch in order to make sure that they wouldn't read. But he himself wouldn't be able to do so and would have to do everything by heart. But today, with again, electric lights, modern electric lights, we're not really concerned about people making any kind of changes or turning on and off lights or playing with dimmers or things along those lines, and therefore today it's permissible to read near electric lights. What can't you do? Well, you certainly can't light a match. That's clearly setting a flame and not allowed. Incidentally, in this case we see a flame being created from a chemical reaction. It wouldn't make a difference how you start the flame. If it was through a chemical reaction, like again in the match, if it was by transferring heat from someplace else, from another flame, it wouldn't matter if you were using a magnifying glass in order to set that fire. In all these situations, if you're causing a flame to get started, regardless of how, it's going to be something which is asur, which is not allowed. You therefore can't turn up the oven. Certainly this is not allowed. Fan a flame or fireplace. So remember, it's not just starting a flame, but even doing something to increase the flame. So if you happen to have a fireplace going or something like that, you wouldn't be able to, to cause it, fan it at all in order to get it to heat up the room more or anything else like that. So again, making the, intentionally going over and blowing on a flame or anything else like that, again, just to increase its heat or make it flare up or something like that, those are all not permissible. Again, sticking a needle into a flame to make it red hot, making metal turn red hot is included within this malacha of kindling or increasing a flame. That was by turning it to red hot or white hot in certain instances, that this is part of what is considered to be, again, making a flame. There's a bit of machloka, this and that, but the bottom line is we can't do it. Now, certainly included, I think it goes without a question, is driving a car. The whole process of starting up the engine, about pressing the gas, everything else of the entire is called a combustion engine. And the reason is because there is combustion, meaning there is fire going on within the engine, and therefore it's not permissible. Again, adjusting a timer to cause a light to turn on sooner, we talked about before, this would not be permissible. Squeezing the trigger of a toy spark gun. Even though the sparks don't have any mamshut, any real substance to them, nevertheless, creating these sparks is still not permitted. Moving an oil lamp, as we talked about before, again, the shifting oil within the lamp creates a problem. Also included is setting, in terms of things we talk about regarding timers and so forth, you cannot set a dishwasher on a timer, or for that matter, any other noisy appliance. In the Shulchan Aruch, it talks about the concept of a water mill running on Shabbat. I mean, if you have things going on Shabbat which are going to disturb the whole day, are going to take away from its spirit, you cannot have them running through Shabbat. In other words, it would, again, it changes the whole atmosphere of what is going on. So people really have to think and understand that this, of course, extends to things like television, or which are questionable if a person should have this at all in their home. But the point is that anything that is going to be going on Shabbat that is going to create a break in the atmosphere, which should be a day for learning Torah, for spending with one's family, in dedicating to Hashem, and so forth. This is the idea behind the day. I think I mentioned it before that, for example, there's a Gemara in the Yerushalmi that mentions that a person who plays ball on Shabbat will have what to answer for in Shemayim, because this is not the purpose of the day. In other words, there's a certain reason. So therefore, putting a dishwasher on a timer, one's washer or dryer on timers and things like that, is totally inappropriate and outside of the scope of the day and is forbidden. Included in this mitzvah also of kindling is taking a bath. The concern was that if a person was allowed to wash, to dip his body, into a bath or that sort of thing, that they would come to go ahead and turn on the hot water. I mean, they turn up the boiler. And in those days, you'd have these, public bathhouses, and you'd have, in other words, you'd have these external units, and there would be again a heat. There'd be heating going on to heat that bath in order to make it possible to go in. So again, if taking a full bath would happen, it's very reasonable to construe that a person would come to, by being in that bath, again, turn on the heat or anything else. And in modern days, we can certainly see that when we have the boilers easily within reach. Just turning on the hot water will cause the hot water to rush in, will cause the unit to turn on, will cause cold water to rush into the hot water tank and therefore be boiled, and then those actually cooking the new cold water as it comes into the hot water that's in that tank. God willing, Bezat Hashem, with the help of God, each and every one of us in our striving to fulfill every single mitzvah and to be careful about every single possible break of the violation of Shabbat, that we shall be zochet to see Mashiach Tikkun Avim Ravim Amen.